previously on Podcast Without Pretense.
Oh, so that's what Jesus would do.
You know, I don't know why the phrase kitten farts came up so much in that last movie, but I'm really glad it's not in the next one.
No, you're not old till, like, 40?
Fuck you, Eric. I'm 40-year-old Jonathan Strickland.
I'm 35-year-old Isaac.
I'm 29-year-old Eric Sandine.
God damn it, you two. and together, we make one grouchy old man and two whippersnappers. So, yeah. How you guys doing?
Well, I haven't had a birthday, so I'm doing all right. I'm going to be 36 this year, so I'm going to get pretty old.
Shut the fuck up, Ayaz.
Hey, you look like you had a great time at your birthday. How was your birthday? And happy birthday.
Thank you. My birthday was awesome. I did my birthday in three parts. I had three separate kind of parties. Nothing too, you know, too remarkable, just kind of chill. The first one was my midlife crisis party, which only women were invited to.
I was wondering what that, like, that was about.
Yeah, see, that was one of those things, like, I kept it pretty much secret from everyone other than the people attending what that was all about. But ultimately what that was about was I had 14 women at this party, and just I was the only guy allowed. But we went and had high tea. So instead of having a rowdy, raucous party, I took 14 women out to a local tea shop, and we had tea and scones and chatted. So that was my midlife crisis party. That night, we ended up doing karaoke, me and a whole bunch of other friends, not just women, men too. And then the following day, I reserved some space at one of the local restaurants, and just a bunch of people came over and hung out, and that was cool. So it was pretty low key, nothing truly wild or crazy. It was nice. It was good to see a bunch of people who mean a lot to me, but I don't get to see them on a very frequent basis. So very, very much an appreciated moment. Since you guys did not have birthdays, did you guys do anything interesting over the weekend that was not birthday related?
Well, I actually did a little bit of a celebratory thing for my son's birthday. So his birthday His birthday was just yesterday, so he was over on the weekend. So we did some, what did we go to? We saw Inside Out at the Pixar movie, which got me to cry twice because I'm a sap now, and it effectively did it. It probably would have gotten me three times if I was sappier, but just twice. And then we had a nice little lunch. So we did celebrate a birthday. We didn't say happy birthday, Jonathan, because I thought my son thought that would be weird.
Yeah.
So next year, though, make sure that we celebrate both the birthdays.
Well, I got to say, I haven't seen Inside Out yet. I'm hoping to see it this coming weekend. So now I know I'll cry at least three times because I'm probably a bigger sap than I am. All right, what about you, Eric? Did you do anything interesting over the weekend?
So I also saw Inside Out. And I don't like to call myself a sap, but yeah, there was definitely crying there. and I saw Jurassic World as well.
How was that? Did you guys enjoy that?
It was a lot of yelling. I thought it was good. That's like my response to it. I enjoyed it as a movie, but I wasn't like, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to run around screaming about it.
Gotcha.
So, Jonathan,
would you grab two margaritas and run like Jimmy Buffett did?
Yes, I would.
You know, when I saw it, one of the things I found a little disappointing was the characters in this movie didn't seem like they've had 20 years of dinosaurs being brought back to life as a thing. Because if I was like the Chris Pratt character, or the character he plays, I would like to hear a little bit about, like, you know, when I was 10 and they were showing these dinosaurs were back in the real world, that was awesome. And I always wanted to grow up and train them, and I got to. We didn't see a lot of that, which I thought was a little strange since they built this world.
Yeah, I thought, like, as a whole, like, that's one of the things I noticed, which was the characters themselves didn't really have much of a story to them. You know, I didn't really have much to identify with any of the characters, because you're just kind of thrown in and you're like, okay, here's all these people, you know.
I haven't seen the film yet, so
sorry.
Oh. No, it's you're not going to bother me. You can spoil it all you want. I mean, it's fine. I've heard a lot about this film already, but what you're saying is kind of interesting to me. Is it so it's definitively within the timeline of the other movies, right? Or is it
totally.
Like yes. Okay, so the other three movies have definitely happened.
They mention John Hammond like 5 or 6 times.
Okay. Yeah, I can't spoil this part, but like there's enough to say this is part of the continuity, and it's slightly there's maybe a little bit too many nods back.
Yeah,
gotcha. I've heard that too. That there were moments when you know an homage once or twice in a film is fine.
Yeah,
giving a little nod of the head, a wink to something that came before. Like my favorite version of this would be Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where they're in the catacombs under Venice, and they see the painting on the wall of the Ark of the Covenant. Mm-hmm. And it's just a moment where what's-her-face, Ilsa or whatever, ends up saying, what is this? And he says, the Ark of the Covenant. And she says, are you sure? He says, pretty sure. And and meanwhile, the motif from Raiders of the Lost Ark, or the Ark, the musical motif that John Williams designed, plays very briefly and softly. And that, I thought, was a brilliant little insider wink. But from what I've heard about Jurassic World, they hit you over the head with it.
Yeah, they beat you with it. There's no subtlety to it.
Well, I'm still going to see it. I mean, obviously, I need to. If I'm going to see this movie, I need to see it on the big screen. There's no point seeing it otherwise. Yeah. Am I going to be at all lost since I never saw the second or third movie?
No.
Okay.
No. I don't remember any details from... There's no actual details from the previous movies, really. Like,
it's
there's
just like,
a little few, but not... Yeah.
Maybe some scenes that mirror things that happened in the other movies, but not, like...
I wouldn't even go that far. I mean, I watched... in preparation for Jurassic World, my boy wanted to watch Jurassic Parks, the three of them. So we watched them fairly recently, and there's not a lot of allusions to 2 and 3. There's just a lot to 1.
Yeah, to 1.
Okay.
There's something I really... This might bother Jonathan a little bit. Maybe as much as it bothered me. There's, like, no discussion in the movie at all why on earth the brand Jurassic anything isn't tainted. Like,
yeah.
It's like calling something the Titanic 2. I know there was a movie and we've watched it. Nobody is crazy enough to name their next boat Titanic. So why would you go, it's not Jurassic Park, it's Jurassic World. Like, I would love to have seen, like, well, you know, the goodwill is actually very, very high with Jurassic anything. So we're going to keep that name. Just like a one-line throwaway.
Something.
How could you call this Jurassic World when, like, just how many people were killed by these animals? Just anything but Jurassic World. But
the more I hear, the more it sounds like this movie pretty much acknowledges the first film, but not necessarily as overtly the second or third. So if you go by that, like... 8 people died.
Okay, good point. Maybe they didn't notice when the T-Rex shows up. And is it San Francisco?
San Francisco. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the movie, but I know, like, you know, you just absorb stuff because everyone talks about it. But I'll have to check both of those out. So I'm hoping to see at least one, if not both of those, this coming weekend. But we're not really here to talk about recent releases. We're here to talk about terrible movies that we pick. The idea being that, hey, we're modern guys. When we watch something at home, you're damn right we got a second screen open, sometimes a third or fourth. Sometimes we got someone in the room with us chatting away. Sometimes we've got a cold frosty beverage of the alcoholic variety. Not me, because that would kill me, but the other two yahoos, they might do that. So, the point being, we don't always pay full attention to whatever it is we're watching. So we laid down a challenge to ourselves, and by we, I mean, I think I mandated it, that we attempt to watch some of the worst movies we can find on Netflix and see how far we can get giving those movies our undivided attention. And at some point, we write down how far we got before we gave up. And at that point, you can either walk away or you can watch the rest of the movie with as many distractions as are available to you. And so this week the movie was picked by our very own Eric Sandin, It was WWJD2, The Woodcarver. And we are introducing a brand new segment for the first time ever. We have decided to, whoever picks the movie has to write a review, then dictate that review to a voice-to-text program. Usually we can actually use Google Translate. Then translate that review at least one to another language and then back into English. And that becomes our official review of the movie. So, Eric, with no further ado, what is the official review of WWJD2, The Woodcarver?
Wait, what about our times?
Oh, well, we can talk about that, but I thought we'd get the review first, and then we can talk about the times and all that stuff.
All right, go.
All right, so let's see. So what I ended up with after the review process was free movie about small-town business corruption. Certainly had a lot of Jesus hockey, which I found really amazing how many of the characters had never heard WWJD. John Ratzenberger is good, but I prefer the amount of character cheers and see the true life more like Jesus and easy to follow plot lines. You will love this movies.
I think that's a positive review. I like the Jesus hockey. I'm not sure what that means, but
hockey stuck with the translation. I think it went into Swedish, and then I went to Zulu, and there must be no word for hockey in like Zulu, so it just kind of skipped it.
Oh, kind of like bull hockey then.
Yeah, sure.
As opposed to the game hockey.
Right.
All right, well, how...
That's right. There's no Jesus playing hockey in the movie, as far as I know.
That would have gotten a 4-star at the very least from me, if at some point Jesus, for no reason, just shows up playing hockey. All right, so how far did we all get? I'll go first. I almost got 0 seconds in, because as I started the movie... Out of habit, I reached for my phone, but I stopped myself, and I'm like, wait, you dumbass, you're supposed to watch this. Even so, I didn't get very far, because I knew I was going to have to take copious notes. So I got 6 minutes 57 seconds in, and I did take copious notes. Right, you guys?
Well, I had my son next to me, and he remained silent for a good number of minutes, and actually it wasn't until 11:43 that he starts asking questions. So that would be my distraction, 11 minutes and 43 seconds. Then I went to a second screen and I took a lot of notes.
Gotcha. Eric?
I made it, what did I just do with that? 48 minutes.
Wow!
Yeah. I had to write the review, so I'm just like, well, I might as well pay attention.
I'm pretty sure that's what Jesus would have done too, Eric.
It's true.
Got at least 48 minutes into that movie.
I am also now posting this review on my account.
Excellent. All right, so are we going to make that a thing too, or we have to post the reviews from
our account? You don't have to.
Because if that's a thing, that's going to make this even more hilarious. All right, so... Because people are going to be like, what is wrong? What these people?
There's going to be a lot of not helpful ratings.
Yeah. All right, so do you want me to, Ayaz, how do you want to do this? Who do you want to do the notes on this movie? I've got a ton, but mine are, as always, filled with commentary, not just plot notes.
Well, let's go with yours, and then okay. I'm sure I'll interject. Because sure. That's what I do.
Okay, so you and Eric can interject while I'm doing this. Okay, so it starts off with, I mentioned in my notes that I reached for my phone. This is the film opens with cuts between a kid, whom we later learn is named Matthew, vandalizing a church, and John Ratzenberger, whom we later learn is named Ernest, walking around an empty and untouched wood workshop. We learn in a meeting with the pastor of the church that the kid's identity was caught on security cameras and that his parents are going through a messy divorce. This is a big plot point in this movie. At this point, I was kind of hoping that the movie might be about teaching compassion and respect through showing it by example, but then the pastor says, "Have you prayed about it?" By the way, if there are two drinking games that will kill you if you try and play them while watching this movie. One is, if you ever hear the phrase, "Have you prayed about it?" drink. The other is, if you ever hear WWJD, you drink. Both of those, either one would kill you. You don't have to do them together. That would kill you faster. But
well, in fairness, this is a very fair two rules that you just said there, because the first half, you hear the phrase, have you prayed about it, a lot. And the second half, you hear WWJD, I'd say at least 20 times. So it does peter out a bit, no pun intended there.
it more palls out a bit, really. So I said that's when I figured it was going to be a lot more hardcore religious, not just kind of using Jesus with a allegory, but to be not subtle at all. And in fact, that is what this movie is. Also, let's take a moment to look at the pastor's attire. He's a Baptist pastor. We know that from the sign on the church.
And he's wearing a collar, right?
He's wearing a clerical collar.
I thought that was odd too. I was like, what is going on right now?
Okay, so clerical collars are not only for Catholics. They're predominantly worn by Catholic priests. But there are other members of the clergy who occasionally will wear a clerical collar, although frequently they wear a different style clerical collar, so it's not confused with the Catholic clerical collar. And even then, it's pretty rare. The only times I've really noticed it being used are when someone is going to minister to people in a hospital, and it's because as a symbol of authority, it allows them to interact with the hospital staff more painlessly than they would if they didn't have the collar on, particularly for young pastors. Sure. But this guy was not a young guy. He was a Baptist pastor. He should not have been. There was no reason for him to have a clerical collar other than the fact that someone thought it. This designates
this is,
man of God.
Right. Yeah.
But it was odd. We learned that Matthew's father works in construction and is helping build a new Sunday school between bouts of yelling at his soon-to-be ex-wife, who believes the dad loves his job more than their son.
Oh, wait, important note here. I have, he apparently believes in prefabricated construction as the way to go. I also have this note. He also likes to yell. Rita is the mom.
Yeah, there's a lot of yelling between the father and mother in this section. Mm-hmm. We also learned that Ernest was the man who made the woodwork for the church in the first place. This is the wood that Matthew has vandalized and destroyed. He's broken some stuff, and he's painted over some stuff.
He specifically spray-painted liar on the side of the church.
Yes. Now, but his wife has died, and since his wife has died, he's lost his faith, or at least has stopped caring, as it seems he still believes in God. Have you prayed about it? Asks the pastor. We learn Ernest's first carving project was a plaque for the church when he was just a kid, and it said WWJD. Hey, they said the name of the movie. Take a drink. Now we see Matthew and his mom. Matthew is a shit, but then he has shit parents who don't pray enough, so it's to be expected. Matthew thinks skull tattoos on the inside of your forearm are awesome. This boy needs help. Pray for him. Ernest shows up while Matthew is painting over the liar he had painted on the church wall. Ernest talks to Matthew a lot about wood. In fact, he says, if you want to see what I do with wood, come up to my place.
Yeah.
What the hell kind of movie is this?
I have that
was also my pull quote as well.
That's the first line I have, dirtiest line in the movie. If you want to see what I can do with wood, come up to my place. Ernest to the boy, Matthew.
Okay. He said it earnestly, at least. I said, what is that? What the hell kind of movie is this? I'm praying for it. Ernest refuses to sign papers that would release him from liability if the Sunday school building isn't finished on time. He is determined to carve planks by hand rather than go with prefabricated wood, and the pastor feels the same way. By the way, there's a point in this point early on in the movie already sets a big problem I have with the film, which is character motivation. You have the pastor go and talk to Ernest, and it's clear that Ernest is still very much grieving for his wife. He loved her dearly, she meant the world to him, and he is struggling. And he doesn't want to go back to, he's playing it off really kind of unemotional, but he doesn't want to go back to wood carving. And then he flip-flops and immediately decides he wants to go back to wood carving. But we don't see the moment where he makes that decision or why he makes that decision, and I felt that was a real problem.
Yeah, because we just deal with it as him crumpling up the contract and giving it back or whatever, right? That's all we get out of it.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I'm going to shit on this movie a lot, but I really do wish they had had just a moment for that character so that we could see his reasoning and why he changes his mind, because it would have... There are little things that would have made this movie a better movie. As much as I'm not a religious person, I can enjoy a film that's about religious stories if at least the characters are handled well, and this was not handled well. And it had nothing to do with the performances. It was all in the writing or the editing. I mean, they may even have had a scene in this movie, but it didn't make the final cut. So for reasons unbeknownst to us, but apparently knownst to the movie, Matthew finds Ernest's wood carving work interesting. Again,
yeah, I don't...
Matthew likes what Ernest does because the movie needs Matthew to like what Ernest does. We are given no indications earlier that Matthew would have found any of this interesting, but in order for the movie to progress, he has to be interested. So just like Ernest has to go back to wood carving for this movie to work, Matthew has to find what Ernest does interesting for this movie to work. And it's not a satisfying character moment either way. So, honestly, there's nothing in Matthew's character so far to indicate that he would be interested in this. It's out of left field. I realize he has to learn a lesson about compassion, but this first step isn't earned in any way. I'll pray for him. Ernest tries to convince Matthew that he should pray for forgiveness, even though in the previous scene we saw that Ernest himself isn't really willing to pray anymore since he lost his wife. There's a lot of problems with hypocrisy in this movie, too. Dad shows up to yell at Matthew for working with Ernest to help with the wood. Matthew says the pastor told him to help Ernest. Dad takes none of that shit and yells at Matthew. "You don't tell me how to raise my boy," screams Bad Dad. I'll pray for Dad. Bad Dad goes to Bad Mom's house to yell at Matthew some more. Bad parents yell at each other some before Matthew comes down. Then Bad parents yell at each other while Matthew is there. Then Matthew yells at the Bad parents and goes back upstairs. So, Bad Dad's construction company will be out of work if Ernest comes through? I don't understand this plot point.
No.
There's only one job in the whole town, and it's the Sunday school edition. And if you don't have the Southern Baptist Church's edition, you ain't shit.
Well, what's confusing me is that the construction company would still be putting the goddamn thing together. It doesn't matter where the wood comes from. The construction company would be the one. They just acquire the stuff that they need to build. They don't. They're not in the business of providing it. They acquire that, and then they build stuff.
They, like, really seem to confuse that point later on, too, where it seems like the guy that wanted the prefab stuff, not Bad Dad, was actually Bad Dad's boss. So.
Yeah. Jerry. His name is Jerry.
Yeah, it was Jerry's construction. So it was – what happened was – all right, so you've got Bad Dad's boss – who is saying, "Don't worry, we're gonna be the ones to do this. It's gonna be fine. We're gonna go with this prefabricated stuff." Maybe it was just so that the construction company would make more money because the prefab stuff would be cheaper than paying Ernest his rate. Maybe that was the plot, but I didn't really get it. They seem to be suggesting that if Ernest was providing the wood, for some reason the construction company would be out of the job, but that someone still has to build the damn building. Right? It's the wood doesn't magically form itself into a Sunday school. So this was really confusing to me. But I'm guessing that maybe it was just about how they would have made more money if they went with prefab as opposed to the hand-carved shit. So anyway, it sounds like there's a plan to make sure Ernest can't deliver. I guess the construction company is our villain. Matthew goes to stay with Ernest for a while. Ernest advises Matthew to consider what would Jesus do before taking any actions. So drink again. Ernest gives his backstory to Matthew. Parents died when he was 15. His wife is the reason he became a professional carpenter. Bad Mom tries to convince Matthew to come back home with his family. "What family?" says Matthew. "Sick burn, Matthew." Bad Mom talks with Ernest, who reveals some more of his backstory. We're getting it in bits and pieces. Bad Mom asks Ernest how he and his wife got through their problems. Ernest says it was all due to the Lord Jesus.
Wait, before we move on to the Rita discussing with Mr. Otto, what's going on? There's a line in this movie where Ernest asks Matthew if Jesus would destroy a church, And I was like, wait, didn't Jesus, like, cause a huge scene in a temple?
Okay, all right, here's where I got to do a Bible lesson. You're talking about the money changers in the temple.
Right, he does overturn tables, he does expel people, so Jesus...
But he's driving out commerce. He says, you have turned my father's house into a den of thieves.
Understood.
He's not turning over church pews. Literally, money changers have set up tables and they are changing money in the temple. It's not, you know, they brought the tables in. So what Jesus is doing is saying, get the fudge out.
Yeah, I'm just saying that he did cause a scene. I did look it up. I'm like, well, it's not exactly the same thing. But it just seemed a little bit like, it's kind of a strange point. Would Jesus destroy a church? I mean, especially if his, like, his symbol is on it. I don't think he would.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. And the whole point of that story is not that Jesus was trying to, you know, tear down a building. No. It was more that he was reclaiming it for worship. That's the whole point of that story.
I've been through 12 years of Catholic school. I know what the point of the thing was. It's more like he did have a scene, though. I mean, when you open
it, he had a bit of a hissy fit inside the church. Yes.
You know, if ever there's a time where you can't pray about something, you're like, what would Jesus do? You're like, I want to overturn this table. You go. You know, he did do that once. So
yeah,
you got that.
Yeah, I want to throw a loan officer out of a building. So that's what he did. All right. So, Bad Mom asked Ernest how he and his wife got through their problems. Ernest says it was all due to the Lord Jesus. It's starting to feel like this movie is really a counseling video for troubled couples in the church who are considering getting a divorce. How can the Bible help my marriage? It was written 2,000 years ago, asks the bad mom. The unspoken end of that line, internet porn wasn't even invented then. Christ was the head of our family. Apparently the answer to WWJD is that Jay would talk about himself a lot. Matthew is left-handed. That means he's the child of the devil and must be stopped. I'm betting a real twist in Act 3 of this film.
we learned that Otto's wife is her name is Christine. Get it?
Yeah.
Christine.
Yes, very Christ-like. I had just noticed that Matthew was left-handed because I'm left-handed, so when I see a left-handed person in a film, it jumps out at me. So I just happened to notice. Sadly, he does not. There's not this big Act 3 twist like I had planned. Although, to be fair, I also skipped a decent section of Act 3. Ernest hears the phone ring and gets up. His wife has cancer. It's a cancer dream. We get more of Ernest's backstory. We see him break down as he confronts his wife's impending death. The wife tries to comfort him with the statement that the Lord has a plan for all of us. Now, this was truly, actually, legitimately a touching scene. I think John Ratzenberger did a great job as a man trying his best to deny an undeniable reality that he does not want to face. And as much as I am shitting on this movie, it was well done, this particular scene. Very sad moment here. So now we see that evil construction dude is pouring gasoline on the wood outside. He's gonna done go and burn up all the wood. Who is it? Is it Bad Dad or Bad Dad's construction buddy? I'm betting on the buddy. Ernest gets up and goes back to work. Matthew asks him, what's the point? Ernest says, you got two choices. You can lend a hand or you can get out of the way. I'm pretty sure you know which one Jesus would do.
But wait a second. When the stuff's on fire, so Ernest goes out there. He's staring at the fire. Matthew is called down by Mr. Otto. That's Ernest Otto. He tells Matthew to come over. So Matthew does come over, who intelligently, as a dumb kid just waking up, grabs a hose, tries to put out the fire, and Ernest is like, where's my note? It says like, oh, it the work's done or something like that. He's like, let the fire burn out. That's what he says. It's like, shouldn't you try to save it? If the dumb kid knows to put out the fire, at least put out the fire.
I think the idea I had was that the wood was separate enough from everything else that nothing else was going to catch fire, and the wood itself was damaged so far that it was beyond recovery.
It must have been a very kind, considerate arsonist that just made sure that there was no gasoline anywhere else.
Well, I mean, you get the feeling that the construction guy, I mean, he's not above sabotage, but he wouldn't go so far as to potentially commit murder. He's an arsonist, not a murderer. So, although to be fair, that workshop was like separated from the house by about two football fields. So Ernest, Bad Dad talks to Ernest. We learn that Bad Dad stopped going to church when he started working for the construction company. So clearly the company is bad, and church would have made their family stay together. This is a really hard part for me, too, because the suggestion here is that if the family had just kept going to church, everything would have worked out. And they wouldn't have been in this situation where the parents are getting a messy divorce. You could argue that one of the reasons for the messy divorce is because the dad is so consumed with his job, and therefore if he had not taken the job, that part wouldn't be there. But I get the feeling that there are some other issues with his family.
That's fine.
Do you think my mom and dad will get back together, says Matthew. Have you prayed about it, says Ernest. Drink. She's not really here, is she, asks some character to Ernest, and then Ernest says, no, she's in my heart, but she's really with the Lord.
Oh, wait, this is when
cemetery.
But Matthew was like, he's talking about, you know, talking about Christine, and then I keep calling him Otto, but Otto tells him, like, you want to go see her? He's like,
oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they go,
I keep her in his closet.
They go in the car, and then Matthew's like checking if Ernest has lost his fucking mind. Is like, does she talk back to you? And he's like, yeah, in memories only. But he's, and then the rest of the line, she's with the Lord, that whole thing. Because yeah. I think maybe Matthew is, even though he's a bit arbitrary, that's kind of a teenager, why not? But he, it looks like he is checking after shacking up with this old dude that he's known for like a minute or two.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, in the beginning of the movie, when he does that, Ernest actually goes, I should call your parents. Which was like so logical. I was very happy with that they actually bothered to be logical.
So the next note I have is Bad Mom shows up at Ernest's house the next day to... Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I skipped a line here. Matthew goes to Bad Mom's house to check on the gas can because he suspects that his dad... or possibly his mom had something to do with this, but probably his dad. He suspects Bad Dad set the fire, asks Bad Mom to help with the wood carving, and she says she can't because she's starting a brand new job. She's like, she's just starting, so she can't, you know, call off at her brand new job and go work with the wood carver. And he says to her, WWJD, drink. And she says she can't. Because of the new job, Matthew is disappointed. Bad Mom shows up at Ernest's house the next day to help out. After all, she says she talked to her new boss about starting a week later and was fired. So I guess she's still a bad mom because now she's jobless. But she can help carve wood.
She's doing what Jesus would do. He wouldn't take a job.
Yeah. Ernest oversees the carpentry in an exciting carpentry montage. Bad Dad shows up and Ernest invites him in to eat with Matthew and Bad Mom, so now the bad family can be together. This is the point where I fast forwarded. I stopped at the point. Yeah. Okay. I stopped at the point where Matthew is trying to get back into school, but the principal doesn't want to let him in. Ernest guilts the principal into giving Matthew a second chance by bringing up an old incident in which the principal, as a student, flooded the school and cost it thousands of dollars in damages, but was allowed to stay in school anyway. Fast forward again. Bad Dad has turned his shady business partner to the police and no longer has a job. Ernest hires him. End of the film sees Ernest visiting his wife's grave and crying.
That's the true
credits
ending.
Roll.
Okay.
So the part I could not watch the reconciliation scenes between the father and the mother. I couldn't watch them because I felt they were totally unearned. It seemed so artificial and such a pat response of, guys, if you just pray, everything will work out fine. And it was so insulting to me because I've seen so many relationships fall apart. And to suggest that there was something really simple that would reverse all of those things, I couldn't take it. So that's why I fast-forwarded.
Okay. So if you'll indulge me, I'm going to read the last bit of my notes.
Please do.
Okay. So we've got I'm going to start back here where Matthew goes to his mom's house because he has a feeling that his dad started the fire. Goes home, finds an empty gas can. They think like, oh, this is a big deal. I mean, I had empty gas cans in my garage. It's not that big a deal. Matthew tries to get back into school, but they say they don't want him back because he's rotten. Matthew works his magic by saying WWJD, but the board isn't having it. because he actually does try to work this, and it didn't work right away. Then Ernest shows up, and I don't know if there's even a door in that part of the wall, but he just, like, shows up. That's what he does. Ernest knows dirt about the principal and reminded him he got a second chance. Now Jack, who's the bad dad, is walking away from his construction company and a 50% partnership. He turns it down and says, quote, "The Lord has a plan for me." Okay, he's got no job, whatever. So Otto has built some kind of cult by having Matthew's family join him by building things. Because, like, the next scene, they're all in the garage or the workshop, and they're all happily working together. Otto has built, like, this is a cult. Holy shit, Matthew stabbed Otto by accident. He was hammering it with a chisel, and it flew into Ernest's leg. Ernest says he's fine so they can finish work. Ernest bled out and was nailed to the crucifix in a terrible turn. Jack's old boss comes by and sets fire to Ernest. No, that didn't happen. But that last
I was about to say, like, what the fuck did I fast forward through?
Wait, he does get stabbed. I didn't make that part up.
Okay.
He gets stabbed in the leg by a chisel, and Ernest is like, oh, it didn't hit any arteries. It didn't hit anything. I'm fine. And he puts on a little bandage on his leg.
So it happens for no reason?
Well, they build and carve wood until the morning comes up and the sun's up, and then Ernest is like, I think we're done here. And I was like, okay. So Ernest walks away, and I'm like, okay, he's going to go to die. Clearly, that's what's happening. And then the dad and the son, they're having a bonding moment. But nobody dies. And then we go to the scene with the church where Jack is turned in Jerry for arson with absolutely, like, I think no proof. I don't know what exactly he had on him. But
No. He says that Jerry confessed.
Oh, did he?
He was confronted and confessed that he had done it. Yeah, I remember this hearing. Because when I fast forward, I push play at the end just to see how it ended. Because, I mean, it was a foregone conclusion that the parents were going to get back together. And it was a foregone conclusion that they were going together to... together they would be able to deliver the wood. The only thing I wasn't sure about was how that part of the storyline was going to be resolved. And there is a little moment where he says that he confessed to what he had done.
Yeah, I liked my ending better, but...
Yeah, no, I did too, because I was like, well, I guess that'll teach me for fast-forwarding.
No, but Ernest does spend the end of the movie crying by... It's the gravesite, right? That's
what. Yeah, his wife's gravesite.
Yeah, and I was like, there's no uplifting part. That's the way it ends, and then it goes black and you get credits. And not the worst movie we've seen. Technically, no. Very good. By technically, I mean lighting was good, audio was good. The acting was all right. There was nobody... I don't think it was too over-the-top comical. It has, like you're saying, there's a huge lack of character motivation and logic.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a very good drinking game. So,
yeah, my biggest problem is that, well, besides the lack of character motivation and logic, it's that other issue, which is it takes something that is inherently complicated and sensitive and slaps a big old Band-Aid on it as if that would magically make things better. I think there needed to be more on the side of Ernest and as well as the pastor just to say, hey, you know, you guys are going to have to work together. You have to decide that this is something that you want to work toward, and then you have to do the work in order for this to happen and not just say pray about it. Because... again, not being a religious person, I don't really subscribe to all this stuff, but at least I really do like the idea of the Lord helps those who help themselves. And it seemed to me like there was a whole lot of praying and trusting that the things that happen are the things that are supposed to happen, as opposed to we can work this out or we can decide it's not worth it to try and work things out. Like, that seems more realistic to me.
Did anybody find it hard to believe that the school wouldn't take the kid back? Like, I know he dropped out and he busted up a church, but, like, why the hell would the school be so against this kid?
I don't know. I fast-forwarded through that part. I watched the last little bit of that scene just to see, like, I wanted to see how Ernest was going to turn this around.
Eric, what do you think? Did you think that the school board was too adamant? Because I thought it was, like...
For some reason, I highly doubt it, considering we're in, like, some tiny town somewhere. At least that's my assumption, you know? Like,
yeah.
I,
Even more reason to make this kid a good guy, an actual school, like I should go through school, because otherwise you're gonna know the guy who robbed you, and it's gonna be Matthew.
Sure.
He's gonna paint liar on your forehead.
Right.
So Eric, you watched 48 minutes of this uninterrupted.
Mm-hmm. I did.
What the fuck were you thinking?
The whole time I was sitting there going, okay, I gotta write a review of this, so I'm gonna pay attention. And somewhere, I don't even remember what was happening at the 48-minute mark. I think the reason I made it to 48 minutes is somewhere around 25, I just zoned out. Like, I was just staring around my living room. It was okay. Like, I mean, it was a crappy Lifetime movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, That's kind of what I reminded it of. Like, halfway through, I'm just sitting there going, oh, Ayaz must be loving this shit.
That's what, you know, part of the Lifetime movies is, like, a lot of salaciousness, a lot of ridiculousness. This was moderately insulting at times. I mean, Lifetime movies, I mean, a really bad one, isn't insulting so much as, it's like, this is a wonder. Who the hell thought this was a good idea? And they executed. This one had, like, this movie had tinges of, oh, it could have been good if they did this. It's only missing something. And the character motivations aren't so crazy that you're like, oh, okay, I can believe this. Like, if Ernest was some kind of, if he's the only guy and he only spoke in two phrases of, have you prayed on this? And WWJD, if that's all he said throughout the whole movie, and he just kind of nods and gives you like a look, and that's the whole thing, I would have thought this movie was awesome. But he actually says other stuff, which is
useless. it would have been kind of subversion and brilliant at the same time. Like, this is like an art piece.
I mean, like, one of the lines Rita says when he's like, well, you know, Jesus was helping us with the marriage. She goes, Jesus wasn't even married. It's like, well, I thought there's a whole school of thought on that one, too, and that's not brought up either.
Well, no, I mean, you don't bring up the Apocrypha when you're having a discussion about what would Jesus do. It just,
I mean, this guy's probing. I mean, they're probing about, like, her potential divorce and his dead wife. I mean, I think anything's fair game at that point, while her son is sitting, again, shacked up with the old man inside. So, like, come on.
Fair. Yeah, Eric, did you have anything else you wanted to add? I mean, we both, or I chiefly, steamrolled this thing, like I do.
Yeah, I mean, I really have nothing. You definitely covered it way deeper than my notes went.
I don't always take... See, there's times where I like it when I don't take notes, simply because it means I'm a little more engaged with whatever it is I'm seeing, and I'm not just angry. Also, it means that we can have more of a discussion and less of a recital. But this time, this movie really... Like, I was going to just do a bullet point type thing, but the longer the movie went, the more I was like, no, I need to write out why I feel this way. And also, some of the dumb quotes, like the whole, you want to see what I can do with wood. Well, it's my turn to pick next week's movie, or next episode's movie. Next week might be a little ambitious. Mm-hmm. So I was originally going to pick the fourth Transformers film, because I had forgotten that Ayaz has already seen it. And since Ayaz has already seen it twice, and you hated it both times, right, Ayaz?
That's true.
Okay. Because of that, I am not picking the next Transformers film. So the movie I have picked, and hopefully neither of you have already seen it, is Avengers Grimm.
One hour, on my list.
1 hour, 25 minutes long, Snow White and three other fairy tale princesses enter the real world to thwart the villainous Rumpelstiltskin scheme to enslave all humanity, starring Casper Van Dien.
And I have not seen it. I've not seen it. And the PWP profile, which I have set up for Netflix, 4 stars.
It's an
hour,
no!
Hour and 25 minutes. At least it's not a long movie.
This is live action. I thought you were describing a cartoon for a while there.
Nope. This is clearly a film that's trying to take advantage of the popularity of Once Upon a Time, the TV series on ABC, which I tried to watch. I got through one episode, and I never watched again. It is, for me, the prediction is 1 star.
Oh, I'm loving this. Starring Casper Van Dien, Lauren Parkinson, Lou Ferrigno. So, I mean, Lou Ferrigno, I mean, he was also the star of Scorpion King 4.
Yeah, by star we mean he was in about 3.5 minutes of it.
This movie is violent, comma, exciting.
Yep.
So I'm violently excited to watch this movie. I cannot believe that this is I have really high hopes for this.
Yeah, I'm hoping it won't just be boring, right? We've done some of these like low budget. A lot of these, this is what you would originally call like straight to DVD style movies.
What's Asylum?
Is it Asylum? All right, well Asylum. Then it could go either way. Asylum has led us astray, and Asylum has provided. I mean, we had some pretty amazing ones. That Lamprey one was an Asylum one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Is that Blood Lake? Is that that one?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. So we've done a couple of Asylum movies, and when it's clear that the people who were making the movie were actually attempting to try and tell a story, it can be phenomenal. The real issue is that Asylum Pictures can also just be such a cynical grab for something that's in the zeitgeist in the cheapest and fastest way possible with no thought to the story that you ultimately you're like, well, there's nothing for me to even say about this because we already know it's shit.
So I have to say, this is just funny to me as the worst navigation ever. So on Asylum, on their website, there's a drop-down menu for recent releases. It is the most unnecessarily large drop-down menu ever because it has like 80 options in it.
I'm looking for it. Is it asylum.cc?
Yes, theasylum.cc.
All right. Yeah, we can actually do a screen share. Actually, can I do a screen share on this?
Yeah.
Let's see. We're using Google Hangouts today, so we're going to try this. Let's do the Asylum page.
There's also an autoplay video there, so.
I'm sharing. I'm presenting to everyone.
So that recent release dropdown.
Where is that?
Top right.
Oh, right here. Select title. Okay. Is that showing up?
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, it's too bad because it's popping over it. I'm scrolling through it right now. It starts off with number one cheerleader camp and it goes all the way to zombie night. So you have to trust me on that one. Sorry you guys can't see that.
Yeah, this is a... So we'll see. Maybe this movie will be worth chatting about. Maybe we will ultimately all regret that I did it. But at the very least, we will have an official Podcast Without Pretense review for Avengers Grimm.
And then I will call it now because I haven't watched it. It's been sitting around. We're going to watch A Deadly Adoption, a Lifetime movie starring Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig that premiered on the 20th of June. We're going to watch that after. So.
Yeah. So, in other words, Eric and I are not really feeling a sense of urgency about doing this next episode.
Well, either way, I'm going to watch it and like as pretend as if you guys are along with
no,
this.
No, I actually am curious. I really want to see, do they just embrace it all the way through and there's never a nod or a wink to the camera?
The review that I read pretty much said it was a perfect, it's not parody. Like it is solid.
Or if it's a parody, it's a parody to the point where it's never tipping its hand that it's a parody.
Right. Yeah.
Which that's great. That's like Andy Kaufman level humor. So assuming of course it was meant to be humorous, but you think Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig, how could it not have been? And so I am incredibly curious about this movie. So as much as I joke about it and as much as I dismiss the Lifetime movies, I am looking forward to seeing what the hell is going on with this thing.
Anyway, should we look into the future then?
Yes.
Next time on Podcast Without Pretense.
Snow White's my favorite.
I think the cops are coming to get me.
I don't... What did Lou Ferrigno play before? I've never heard of him.